How you doing? Glad to be back. This is Forrest Foster, Head of Information Commons and Access Services here at Winston-Salem State University in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Glad to have you all listeners listening in on the show. Today we're going to take a different route. Over the next couple of episodes, we're going to take a little different route. We're going to focus more in on what we're doing here at Winston-Salem State in the Commons and in the instructional sessions. I think what we're doing here is very progressive, and I think it's very parallel to what other institutions are doing. I guess gregarious, and what we're trying to do with faculty and students. And I think we do a pretty good job of it here. So this is a good way for us to get our ideas out to the populace and to the listeners, and so we can share and, you know, so be it, partake in one another and ideas and sharing and exchange of ideas, so we can all be better practitioners of this thing we call librarianship. But today we're going to focus on something that I've truly enjoyed implementing and practicing and sharing and collaborating with some music professors on campus, and it's all really about two extremes, libraries and hip-hop, focusing more in on the intricacies of digital literacies and hip-hop production, traditional hip-hop production, taking sampling. Well, what is sampling? Sampling is taking of snippets and bits of music and creating a new sound, and how that really and how that method really exemplifies traditional information literacy skills. And we're gonna show you how that's done by traditional standards, which is very cool. Students love hearing about this. They love the idea and the concept, and it's one way to get them engaged and to really understand the standards of information literacy. With that being said, I think a lot of times in our field of librarianship, we think and we have a tendency to focus on information literacy skills more often, just only in higher education, and only exemplifying these skills by demonstrations of, you know, research papers and databases, etc. I think rarely do we bring real life application to the forefront. I think a lot of people are starting to do that for the past couple of years in regards to information literacy skills by using, you know, different methodologies and different exercises. Being able to focus on, you know, meta literacy skills that are prevalent in certain occupations that many would never probably envision information and digital literacy skills to be embedded in, would heighten our awareness, I think, about information literacy skills. And it would also probably engage students as well. I know a lot of us are no longer just using and teaching and learning about hip hop for leisure and historical purposes. I think a lot of us are demonstrating how certain aspects of hip hop can be tied to digital information literacy skills or learning outcomes that can be measured and, you know, assessed. At this juncture, I think everything we do must be tied to a measurable outcome to have a major role and relevancy to a curriculum and on the university campus. So let's look at this title. Okay, so the title of this is Exposing Literacies Within a Cold Culture, and hip hop being a subculture, or to politically correct, call it a cold culture. So in exposing literacies, just, I guess, finding the hidden literacies that professions or unconventional professions, people in these professions have done prior or before, and they're kind of hidden. So I'm trying to expose them now, exposing literacies in cold cultures. So I'm just exposing what these producers have done for the past, I guess, quarter of a century. And again, I'll be doing some other professions as well down the line. But today we're talking about hip hop and how producers have used these literacies for the past quarter of a century. Of course, standard number one is determines the nature and extent of the information needed. Okay, so, and again, too, I want to talk about this before I go on, is I'm implementing this into a class. So each standard, the students will have to take it on an assignment to show they can exemplify these skills. So standard number one is pretty self-explanatory. However, we are giving them an option of using vinyl and digital files, since we are in a digital age, and sometimes it's, you know, you can't get to a vinyl these days. But, you know, a lot of it's going to be based upon feasibility and availability. But that can determine what you need. So that is standard number one. You know, that kind of determines what you choose, a vinyl or
a digital MP3 file, and there's ways you can get that online. And so that goes into a whole nother thing, but we'll get into that soon. But standard number one, for hip hop producers, you know, understanding the information needed to craft a song or a beat, was fairly easy back in the day. So, you know, like their predecessors, the golden era was like from 1988 to 1993, 94, you know, they kind of understood that vinyl records could serve as, you know, like the rudiment for the creation of a song or a beat. Okay. So now we're on standard number two. Standard number two, basically states accesses needed information effectively and efficiently. And in this standard, producers have traditionally accessed the information on vinyl by two different methods. And one is being through the lineage and family outlet. Grandparents and parents in the 70s and 60s owned mini records and they had record collections in their basements. So that was beneficial for producers of the 80s and early 90s to access those records. You know, their parents would have, you know, funk records, disco records, R&B records, jazz records, rock and roll records, blues records. So there are all types of genres that they could pull from. Another accessible point would be record stores. Of course, in the late 80s or in the mid 80s, and record stores were prevalent. So nowadays, they're not. Everything's pretty much online. But you might find one or two record stores still alive and well. That was the second access point. Producers would go to record stores and dig through collections, scan collections. Well, they were called crate diggers, actually. They would go to the store, look for certain riffs or certain sounds they were looking for to make a new sound out of. They look for certain artists, maybe, because, you know, maybe certain artists had a certain sound, or of course certain genres have a certain sound. Most vinyl, they were kind of housed in milk crates, and hence the term crate diggers. So they got that term from actually digging in crates because the vinyl was kept in crates. So standard number two, they were accessing the information from family members' basements, so their own parents' basements, and vinyl record stores. For standard number two, assignment, an assessment, we would have the students actually go outside to an actual record store. So we're going to leave the brick and mortar, go to the actual record store, because some of the best learning comes outside the classroom. This would be a good flipping classroom technique, too, be a good method for that. So we want to take them actually to the store and get them hands-on, get some authentic learning, and actually dig through the vinyls and look at certain genres and look at certain artists so they can see who they want to sample, sounds they're creating in their head, what visuals they have creating in their head. So they're kind of formulating ideas already, but as far as accessing, we will actually take them to the store and so they can get hands-on and choose some music that they are familiar with or that they're maybe not familiar with and maybe want to create something with that. Okay, now we're on standard number three. This is the standard where producers would evaluate and assess their vinyl. Once they've acquired it from the record store or your parents' basement, they would come back and they would put the needle on the record and they would listen to sounds that they can sample or snip to construct a new sound. Many producers, you know, and I don't think this is a widely known, but many producers would manage their own collections vehemently and methodically. Some producers would, you know, arrange their collections in a variety of type ways. You know, some, of course, by genre or alphabetically, by artist or by genre. You know, I like to say these collections, if you know, many people don't know that, but many of these collections were well designed and classified, similar to an archives department or similar
to a library or a museum.
Almost. A lot of people real meticulous about order and neatness. This is around the standard when producers will really sit close to a record player and observe the information to see if they hear something they would want to take or snippet. They're really probably thinking about time signature, key signature, you know, horn riffs, jazz riffs, guitar riffs, jazz notes, horn notes, envisioning how all these parts can be put together. A meticulous, methodical phase, and they're kind of also searching too. So this is a very important phase as well. Now what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to read standard four to you. There's an article I've written about this concept. It was in Computers and Libraries 2014 May edition, and actually I'm just going to read this part because this is very good. I don't want to leave anything out, but it pretty much talks about In regards to hip-hop, hip-hop music producers are no different than students or other types of researchers. This stage when a hip-hop producer would study and assess records from their private collection, looking for the sounds they wanted to pull from these or those records to piece together and formulate a new sound. It was not a random task. Some hip-hop producers have been labeled as a walking encyclopedia. Many had a keen understanding of what and where specific sounds were located on specific records. Such astuteness is synonymous with librarians and information specialists knowing and locating books in a library collection without the help of a book marker or a PDA device. In an educational setting, this would be the point at which a student creates a typical term paper or multimedia project or speech or journal to turn into a professor at the end of class. At this stage, the hip-hop producer has already assessed, accessed, and evaluated information needed to complete the final project, which in this case would be a music composition or a song. So how does creation of a song or a beat take place in hip-hop production? When a producer has specific sounds chosen to sample and manipulate, an experimentation still occurs when trying to piece sounds and samples together. There are several different techniques producers and beat makers employ in creating a hip-hop beat or construction of a beat. Two of the most prevalent are chopping and looping. Now, what is chopping? Chopping has been described as a puzzle due to the fact that an individual is taking pieces of different sounds and trying to piece them together congruently to create a new sound. Looping. Looping has been described as taking a larger phrase, one or more phrases, and repeating it with little or no alteration. Both techniques involve the application of digital and reproductive literacy skills. Equipment know-how is also extremely important when it comes to production. Since the 80s, samplers, turntables, and beat machines have been the choice of equipment for hip-hop music production. MPC sampler is a technological instrument that allows producers and musicians to take snippets, excerpts, or samples of sound. Learning how to effectively and creatively execute these desired effects on such equipment requires patience and practice. Mastering the use of these devices certainly counts as both an information literacy and digital literacy skill. Some producers incorporate the use of keyboards and pianos to integrate into their creative arsenal with the goal of creating a beat or a song or a composition. So for the in-class assignment for this would be the professor and I would actually sit down and let the class know that they are going to construct a composition. We're going to take measures or bars. Some people call them bars, but that's for the musical people out there. We're going to take 65 to 75 bars and measures of music. Okay. Within those bars, eight of them should be geared towards a chorus. Usually and typically, a song can have three verses. Each verse can each contain 16 bars of music. So 16 times 3 is about 48 bars or measures of music. And that's the standard we also want to go by, too. Now, that can be changed. That's subject to change. But you add in, you know, measures of music for the intro and outro. And then we can get more specific than that. There might be certain techniques we want the students to use, such as looping, okay, as we just talked about, such as chopping. And then there might be some other things, some intricacies or other techniques we might want to throw in there to see if they, you know, meet that digital literacy component or skill. So those are just a few things. But, you know, there is a measurement. There is a bar. There's a benchmark we want them to get to and complete. And once they do that, they have met their basic standard for completing standard 4, which is to create a musical composition. Standard 5, information literacy standard number 5, emphasizes a person's need to know about ethical and legal issues, including intellectual property rights and responsibilities. Now, some producers of the golden era did not adhere to this standard. Many issues arose as a result of producers taking samples or excerpts from other artists without permission. In fact, several high-profile court cases stem from hip-hop artists and other artists not crediting or clearing their samples they were reusing or remixing. As sampling grew into a cultural and economic force, the music industry invoked copyright laws to protect the recordings they owned. As of today, if a producer uses samples, certain entities must be contacted and informed about authorizing the use of, you know, sampling of their music. As of today, producers must identify two entities for most of sampling clearances: the copyright owner of the song or music publisher, and the copyright owner of the master tapes, which is usually the record company. Today's producers must also understand that there is a price associated with sampling clearance as well. In addition to looking forward and identifying the right sound to sample, producers now have to assess and evaluate what it's going to cost them to use a particular source or resource. In some cases, hefty fees may be associated with sampling for a particular recording. That's where the metacognition kicks in. Understanding oneself and knowing how much money you have, or if you don't have enough money to pay for it, or just understanding, is this even worthy enough to be sampled? Going through the whole litigation and red tape. So that's where the metacognition kicks in standard number 5. So again, hefty fees may be associated with sampling for a particular recording. So many today's producers need to limit their creativity to sampling materials that are within a budget. For many of the Golden Age producers, the interpretation and enforcement of copyright laws has suppressed their creativity abilities, largely due to the escalating fees. In some fact, many have moved into other different ways to create music, and a few still find ways to maneuver around the financial cuffs of lawyers and publishers. But here's the thing, and here's the reason why we're doing all of this. Many times as librarians and information specialists, we tend to focus merely on databases and research papers. But there are many other sources of information and many other ways to conduct research in order to inspire a new creative work and a whole range of digital literacies required in our culture. One does not have to think of outside the box to appreciate how hip hop music fits. It's just a matter of maximizing the space within the box to make room for it. So, to sum it all up, I'd like to say, first of all, thank you for your time. Say thank you for listening. And again, this is one way to show you how to educate faculty and staff in your university community and in the music industry and the hip hop culture and musicians around that. Number one, information literacy is in music and it is in hip hop production. Two, that we can engage students and faculty in showing them new ways how to demonstrate information literacy skills and digital literacy skills. And number three, you can also tie learning outcomes to it and assess it. So I just want to say thank you for your time. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you have any questions, please give me a call. You can email me and I will put a couple of YouTube links up that are a little bit more in detail. Well, I wouldn't say in detail, but they give you a 5-minute brisk run through of what this is about. And I also put the published article on the website as well. Enjoy. Thank you for your time. This is Forrest Foster signing off. Thank you.